Welcome to the Tennis IQ podcast. I'm Josh Berger.
I'm Brian Lomax. And our topic today is how to play versus an injured opponent. It's probably a scenario that everyone listening has encountered at some point in their tennis career. Maybe you've been good at it. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you've figured something out. But Josh and I wanted to talk today about different strategies to use when you're playing an injured opponent, perhaps different ways of thinking about that so you can be more productive. We also want to talk about the challenges of it because it's not necessarily easy. And even at the pro level, you still see players struggling with what to do when their opponent is injured. And in fact, the idea for this particular episode came from watching a recent match with Roberto Bautista Agut, who was playing someone who was seemingly injured near the end of the match, and Bautista Agut really didn't handle it well. He was up 6-3, 5-2, and it really threw his game off and ended up winning the match, or winning the second set 7-6, but it really took about 35 or 40 minutes longer than it should have. And you know, I know he was frustrated at the end. You could see it on his face and just in his behavior. So this is something that I think players of all levels struggle with. And I think, you know, the first thing we want to cover, Josh, really is, what are the challenges that face players when the person on the other side of the net is showing an injury? You know, whether we can talk about whether it's real or not. But they appear to be injured. What do you think are some of the major challenges with dealing with that situation?
Yeah, I would say a big one, probably the first one we can get into, is a loss of focus, where instead of focusing on the things that we want to be focusing on as tennis players, things like our strategy or our game plan, you know, what adjustments we have to make against our opponent, things like, you know, our mindset and how we spend time in between points, or how we spend time on changeovers, you know, making sure that we are doing what is needed to play well, to perform at a high level, rather than focusing on those sorts of variables or moving our feet or focusing on something with our stroke, perhaps. Rather than focusing on that, we can very easily be distracted towards what's happening on the other side of the net, what's happening with our opponent. And then a lot of thoughts can go into our head in terms of, you know, how injured are they? Are they going to be able to keep playing? Are they faking it? You know, are they going to be able to continue this match, right? Are they, you know, how is this going to impact them? Are they going to need an injury timeout? So it can be very easy to start thinking about all of these things and lose our focus and have our focus drift from ourselves and, you know, how we're managing our side of the court in the match towards whatever is happening with the opponent. So, you know, and also there's the empathy piece, right? Maybe we feel empathetic or sympathetic for what they're going through. And, you know, again, that's, I think, a natural human feeling. But at the same time, is that necessarily helping us to perform well and ultimately win the match that we're playing? All of these sorts of distractions, all of these types of thoughts that could be popping up and are natural to pop up are likely going to make it more difficult, not less, to play our game and to ultimately compete in this battle that they're in.
Yeah, I think you talk about a number of interesting points there, because I think the focus now is on what is sort of the drama that is going on that other side of the net, which is out of our control.
Yep.
But now we're if we're not careful, we become immersed in what's going on over there. And as you said, is it a real injury? Will they continue? I think that's one that's really difficult to deal with, because I think at some level, most of us are hoping that they won't, because that way it'll end and we'll win. And then when they do, it can be really hard to turn it all back on. And so I think it's really important that we figure out ways to bring the focus back to what we need to do to back to the mission of winning the match, winning two sets, and how we do it. But this is a really challenging situation. Not only are you seeing what's going on the other side of the net, but maybe there's a medical timeout. Okay, what are you going to be doing there? If you're thinking about what's happening with the medical timeout, again, you're probably distracted from what you need to do when the player decides to play, if they decide to play. I think the empathy thing is also really can be a real factor, especially if it's somebody you know. Many of us play people that we know. We probably have positive feelings for many of the people that we play, and it's unpleasant to see them injured. That may not always be the case. You may be in a tournament where you're playing somebody you don't know, or perhaps even someone you're not particularly fond of, but it can still be difficult to see all those things. And so I think the consequences of all of that, I mean, there can be it can range, right? But I think at a certain level, it's more you've lost focus on what you're trying to do, and so you probably lose some rhythm in your game at that point. If we're not careful how we manage this and we do lose focus, we could let nerves take over and we become more passive, or we all of a sudden start trying to end points really fast and we get overly aggressive. That's a little bit of what I saw from Batista Agut in this recent match, is his normal discipline process of how he plays points was completely corrupted. And he was not putting in the amount of consistency and the number of shots he was using prior to open up the court against his opponent, and instead was going big really early in points. And that's just not his process for how he plays, and just shows that that's what got corrupted. The discipline of how he plays went out the window, and now he's playing in some other way because he's been distracted by what's going on. Perhaps he thinks there's some gamesmanship going on. Perhaps he started to think more about the result and how, I'm supposed to beat somebody who's injured. This guy can't even move. How can I be losing points to this guy who can't even move? And I think another consequence that can happen is, and we've seen this, Josh, you were telling me about this a little bit earlier before we decided to record, was the injured opponent decides to play, and somehow they start playing better. Whether it's they're just going for their shots and they're all going in knowing they can't move, or it seems like they can't move between points, but during points they're moving brilliantly. We've seen that with a number of players. And so, again, there's a lot of stuff going on that other side of the net that is really challenging our ability to focus and remain disciplined.
Definitely, definitely. I think another example of this, a pretty high profile example took place recently with Nadal, in his match against Taylor Fritz, where he was clearly very affected by the injury that he had. It turned out to be an abdominal tear, and it was very clear that it was impacting him. He was serving below 100 miles per hour, which is, clearly much less, slower than he generally serves, and tough to be successful that way. But from the baseline, hitting winners and, being more aggressive than he generally is. So, from an opponent's perspective, that can lead to a number of expectations, right? I expect that when I'm playing a opponent that can hardly serve, I should be beating them. Or, okay, this person can hardly move, this match should be over, or this should be easy. And those sorts of expectations have, as we've talked about many times on this podcast, can have a really detrimental impact. They can put pressure on us when things aren't so easy and we think that they should be. That can lead to a lot of frustration. Again, we brought up the focus piece. But in a match like that, I think Taylor Fritz actually handled it as well as he could have, considering the challenging situation, even though he ended up losing. I mean, I think Nadal earned that that win. And, you know, he took, I think, some sort of maybe anti-inflammatory pill or something like that, and sort of, you know, he won it just by a couple points in that, in the tiebreaker. But you know, it really is tough being on the other side of that, because as you said, you know, people can start to say, oh, I should be beating this person, this match should be over, things like that. And then when the match doesn't quite go as smoothly as we think it should at that point, or it's competitive, or even you're losing, especially if an opponent, you know, starts to raise their level, then, you know, it can certainly lead to the other player collapsing or their level dropping.
Yeah. And you know, there have been some, you know, not only that Nadal one where he overcame his injury, you know, a couple of instances came to my mind more kind of going back in time, but Michael Chang versus Yvonne Lendl at the 1989 French Open, where he's cramping in the fifth set, and Lendl clearly affected by that, and also affected by Chang's use of the underhand serve, because he was cramping in his thighs and he couldn't always get up to hit the serve. So that was a, you know, one famous incident. And I think another one that sticks out in my mind is 1996, Pete Sampras versus Alex Krejcik in the U.S. Open, and they had a fifth set tiebreaker, and Sampras was not necessarily injured, but he was clearly not feeling well, to the point where he, you know, he threw up a couple of times during that fifth set tiebreaker. And if anybody hasn't watched that, not to see that part, but just the how exhausted Sampras looks and what he manages to do in this tiebreaker to win, it's quite amazing. And so, yeah, there are going to be times where these players are injured and they figure it out on their own what they're going to do. You know, we talked about on the other side of this equation, right? We had an episode about what to do when you're injured. And, you know, sometimes these players figure out what they can and can't do, and they're able to come up with a game plan to continue to fight. And so we've got to be ready for that. As much as we, you know, see what's going on the other side of the court, and we think we've got some sort of wounded animal over there, the wounded animal might play better. They might fight harder. And we have to be prepared that that's going to be the reaction. We can't, you know, expect them to just lie down and tank and give it away. Although that could happen too, but we have to be ready for them to play better, because we have seen many instances where that happens. And in fact, perhaps when you've been injured, you've been able to overcome that and figure it out and come through. There's no reason your opponent can't do that as well. So let's think about some perspectives, Josh, that could be useful. So you see your opponent injured, really tired, something, right? They're not quite right. Any thoughts on what we should, you know, what perspectives we could bring to that situation so that we remain focused and can continue to focus on our mission?
Yeah, I mean, one way that can be helpful is simply viewing the injury as a weakness in their game, right? Almost trying to be able to, rather than, you know, bringing emotion to it and sort of viewing it through that sympathetic or empathetic perspective, viewing it as, okay, this is a weakness for me to try to capitalize on, and simply trying to view it like that. And okay, maybe it's their movement. How can I capitalize on that? How can I even exploit that, right? Maybe it's drop shots. Maybe it's keeping the opponent moving. And I think oftentimes when you are watching the, you know, professional tennis, you do see that. You do see when an opponent is injured, that's what pro players are trying to do. They're trying to capitalize on it in that way. So I think that's one approach in terms of, you know, really trying to exploit whatever that weakness or vulnerability in their game is. I mean, we, you know, as we've talked about, tennis really is a combat sport. It's not a sport of, you know, it's not figure skating where you get a score for your forehand and a score for your backhand and your serve and your volley. If we compare that to the opponent's score, you're battling each point. And if an opponent has a glaring weakness or has a vulnerability in that moment based on an injury, I would go as far as say it's your obligation or your duty as a competitor to try to capitalize on that. Don't feel, you know, and I think what goes along with that is being able to make adjustments, not just saying, okay, this is the way I play and I'm going to just stick with that because that's my playing style. I think, you know, to a certain extent, we do want to be very clear about what our playing style is and how we play and what are some of our main patterns. But at the same time, being able to make adjustments, maybe not every point, but at least some of the time, to really capitalize on what you're seeing on the other side of the net.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a point that I wanted to also reiterate is that this is a combat sport. This is a fight. And if your opponent has chosen to continue to play, you have to take that at face value that they're ready to play. And so the empathy thing, while it's a natural human response to what's going on, is we have to put it aside a little bit because they have chosen to come back to the fight. And, you know, similar to boxing, you know, you have somebody who is perhaps is ready to get knocked out. So you have to continue to work on those weaknesses so that you can knock them out. I think with respect to maybe playing your style, if playing your game style is actually what got them injured, then you keep doing that. So, for example, you know, maybe they have a groin injury or an ankle injury, and that was sustained through how much movement you're making them go side to side. Well, then you keep that up, right? That's how you attack that weakness. But yeah, I think looking at the injury as another weakness to exploit, just like you might be trying to attack their backhand, you are now trying to attack that injury and, you know, the shots that are compromised because of that. Now, if we go back to your example with Taylor Fritz, a little bit harder for him to completely take advantage of that particular injury because it only seemed to manifest itself on serves. I suppose overheads would have been a problem as well, but that's not necessarily something you want to be feeding the doll. Right. And so yeah, there wasn't a lot to exploit there for Fritz in terms of that particular weakness. Right. And I think that's why Nadal was still able to get through it because he could compensate for not having as effective a serve. I mean, early in his career, he was more or less getting his serve in with spin and starting the point. So he knows how to do that. And he, you know, he did that pretty well. So I think having the perspective of this is a fight. My opponent has chosen to remain out there, so I need to continue the fight. I need to want to finish this player off. I need to stick with, you know, my sort of discipline. And I feel like, you know, I mentioned earlier, the consequences of losing your focus can often lead to either passivity or overly reckless. And both are bad, right? So, and both of those are typically are reactions to some sort of nerves going on with you. You've lost focus and you're thinking more about winning or the opponent. And so you either get, when you get nervous, you get either passive or you start trying to end points really fast. You just want out, right? So what is sort of the mean of that? The virtuous mean of that, I think, is really a combination of you playing with discipline, which means knowing how you play the game. And if you need to add a few things in, like drop shots, well, make sure you're good at drop shots. Don't be adding things in that you're not good at. So discipline, confidence, and courage. The courage to continue to take, you know, reasonable risks. If shots down the line are open, you go for those. We don't want to start pushing or again being passive. So we want to find that virtuous mean where we're playing a good brand of tennis that is consistent with how we play. And part of that is about how we attack weaknesses. And now we've got an additional weakness to attack. So this is an opportunity for you. It's an opportunity you want to seize on in this fight here. And I think the more that we can be visualizing this as a fight, the better that we'll perform in that situation. I know I've played some players who have been injured. Sometimes I've handled it well. More recently, I've handled it much better. You know, and I did exactly what you suggested, Josh, which was, you know, attack the weakness. And I knew my opponent really well, and I felt bad for him and so forth. But again, he chose to stay out there. And we talked about it after the match, how he was injured and he chose to stay out there. And I told him what I was doing. I told him, I was like, you know, I'm trying to get you, you know, for him, he had pulled a muscle in his leg. And anytime he would do a split, it would really, really hurt. He'd like to slide a lot on the court. And it's like, I was trying to put you in situations where you had to do that, you know, just to see what would happen. Maybe it gets worse. And, you know, that sounds kind of cruel. But again, he's the one who chose to stay out there. I can't manage how he's feeling. Can't manage, you know, what pain he feels. But as a competitor, I have to stay focused on trying to perform well and trying to secure the match.
Definitely. And yeah, to me, if you're not trying to do that, or even, you know, I think it is natural to almost feel bad about trying to exploit that vulnerability. But as you said, they've chosen to stay out there. They've chosen to keep competing, and we have to assume that they're trying to compete at their best despite these challenges, these physical challenges. So we have to do everything in our power to try to, you know, perform well. And I think, you know, one factor that can make that harder is that, you know, we can sort of, and we talked about expectations, but, you know, we can almost lose respect for their level and almost assume that they're actually worse or less capable than they actually are in that moment. And I think this attitude or the mindset of we want to respect all and fear none can actually go a long way here, where and I believe we have talked about this, but you know, this attitude that you know, every opponent that we play, we want to give them their due respect, where it can be very easy to overlook people or say, oh, that should be easy, or even start to look towards the next match if we're in a tournament. But we want to respect them, and we certainly want to respect that injured opponent, knowing that they can be tricky, knowing that they've decided to continue playing, and, you know, treating them to some extent like any other competitor that we have to play. So I think, you know, keeping that in mind and making sure that we're not overlooking them or not looking ahead, and really trying to stay present in, you know, what's important now. What do I have to do now to beat this opponent that's in front of me? And maybe they will end up retiring, or maybe they will get to that point where they, you know, can't continue. But right now that opponent's in front of us, and we have to, you know, focus on what's important in this moment. And maybe it's, you know, maybe our attitude isn't where it needs to be. Maybe we are getting frustrated, or we are losing our focus. And what's important now in this moment is getting our focus back, is maintaining control of our emotions, right? So maybe what's important now is, as we were talking about, really capitalizing on their vulnerabilities in their game. So, you know, maybe what's important now is best using that time, you know, if they take an injury timeout, best making sure that we are staying loose and staying focused and having a clear intention and game plan when we return to the court. Brian, when you think about, you know, whether it's an injury timeout or an opponent needs to leave the court in a situation like this, what do you think are some of the main things that that players can do during that time, so that when their injured opponent comes back or the match resumes, they're in the best place, both mentally and physically?
Yeah, and I think you bring up some good points, Josh. It's like, all right, we have to figure out what's important now, and not be distracted by what's happening with that opponent. And so I think, let's say there's a medical timeout, and you're sitting there on your chair waiting. You know, I think there are a number of things that you can do that can help you stay focused. And these are things that you can also do just regularly on changeovers. And you see some professionals doing this. You can visualize what you want to do when the next couple of games start. How do you want to play those first few points? Think about, you know, the level of focus. Think about the emotional state you want to have, and start working on yourself for that. You could simply, you know, maybe meditate or relax and focus on your breathing. Put a towel over your head so you're not really seeing what's going on. I think maybe looking over at the opponent may not be helpful for everyone in that situation. We tend to focus on what we see, and so this might be a good time to close the eyes or put a towel over your head to restrict what's coming in, you know, through your eyes. And I've often thought about, you know, something we discuss a lot with golfers between shots, because they have a much longer period of time from when they strike the ball to when they strike the ball in the next shot. There's more going on than, say, a between point routine in there. And so for many golfers, we talk about on the walk to that ball, you have this time so that you don't have to be focusing all of this time on the course. Try to think of some place in the world that really helps you feel relaxed. Maybe it's a beach house. Maybe it's someplace in the mountains. And it's a good place for you to just go relax. And so you try to imagine yourself in this really relaxing place. And then when time is called for the medical timeout, you want to have just a way of switching back on. And how do we do that? We immediately get back into our routines and our rituals. You know, when we talk about discipline, that's what it's a lot about. It's how do you know this situation that's a little bit abnormal. It's not the quite what we're used to. Things may feel out of control. How do we begin to bring control? We start to focus on our routines and our rituals. So we're practicing the skill of control in that way, and that's going to involve, you know, you breathing, you talking to yourself the right way, you going through all the steps that you would normally go to. Maybe you bring your towel back to the back of the court, you put it down, you go through everything in your between point routine ritual, you go through your serve ritual, and you're staying really focused on those things. You know, we see players like Rafael Nadal do so many little different things out there, which all have a purpose of him exercising control over a chaotic environment. And that's what we want to do. We want to treat the ability to control things as a muscle, as a skill. And I think it's our routines and our rituals that help us do that. And so if you can do that, you know, when you come out of that medical timeout, I think you have a better chance of focusing on what you want to do. But during that medical timeout, I think, you know, things like visualizing, meditating, breathing, restricting what you see, really important, simply relaxing, maybe. I think, we've talked about this idea that we are all, you know, individuals who have different levels of different emotions drive us. And this is where it's helpful to know for yourself, what's that, you know, what are those emotions, you know? Are you high on that intensity scale, or are you a little bit calmer? You know, it's knowing where you are on that scale and using that time to begin to generate the right mental and emotional state so that when you get back out there, you're ready to compete against a worthy opponent. You brought it up, Josh. We have to respect this player. Just because he or she is injured does not necessarily mean that they're done or that they're going to play worse. They might play better. They may tank, but we don't know yet. So we have to treat them as a worthy opponent.
Definitely. And I'm glad that you brought up the visualization piece. And I think visualization is definitely one of the key mental skills that can be used during this time, especially if we have a gap. And for the golf example, I think a way that people can think about this actually is through the movie Happy Gilmore, where they talk about finding that happy place and, you know, sort of closing your eyes and really trying to visualize and really try to picture yourself there. And, you know, from a golf perspective, that might include, you know, that time where you're really relaxed on the driving range, or, you know, playing by yourself, right, without sort of the pressure of being around other people. And for tennis, you know, really trying to visualize those types of situations where you feel most comfortable, where you're relaxed, where you're loose, where you're able to bring out some of your best tennis. And, you know, during an injury timeout, you should have the time sort of without any sort of time constraints to really try to get, you know, all your senses involved, to really try to visualize as well how you want to be feeling, maybe some of the specific types of points or patterns that you want to be playing. How are you, you know, what type of tactics are you going to use to capitalize on your opponent's current state? But really trying to use that time. And I think visualization is a great way to do that. I think there's, you know, also you want to be making sure that you're moving around. It could be very easy to go back to the court and not feel as loose when you get back there. So making sure that you're moving around, whether you're shuffling or whether you're jogging around the court a little bit, but making sure that when it is time for the match to start again, that you're physically ready. I think that can be a big one as well. You mentioned breathing can certainly be helpful, or meditating. We see so many athletes using these, you know, so many professional athletes using these skills now during changeovers, whether it's Iga Swiatek, whether it's so many others. So I think, you know, when it comes to all of this type of stuff, how we handle it in the moment, how we think about it, you know, in terms of our mindset, we want to have a plan. We want to think this type of stuff out ahead of time. We want to, you know, so that when it does happen, and if you play enough tennis, you will play an injured opponent, or you probably already have, you want to have a plan, and you want to say, okay, if my opponent has a tough time moving, this is how I want to try to capitalize on it. If it's their serve that's infected, this is what I want to do. If they have to leave the court for a period of time, this is my plan. But the more that this type of stuff can be planned out ahead of time, you will feel more prepared. You will feel more like you know how you want to be handling the situation. So I think when it comes to a lot of this type of stuff that we're discussing, simply feeling like you have a plan and feeling like you have, you know, gone through that process of thinking through these different scenarios can really do a lot. And it can, you know, it can almost be an if then situation. Okay, if my opponent leaves the court, then this is how I want to handle it. If my opponent is talking out loud, maybe about retiring or potentially retiring, this is how I want to handle it. But, you know, planning out these types of scenarios ahead of time can do us a world of good when the scenario actually takes place.
Yeah. And I like how you're stating that, Josh, because it's very algorithmic, right? Sort of if this, then that type of approach. And I think we did discuss a lot of that type of thinking and planning in our episode on mental contrasting. So we'd definitely point people to that, because we want to make sure when this happens, because it probably will at some point in your career, that you know how you want to respond. You don't want to act as if I can't believe this is happening, right? You want to have a plan for how you will respond to this so that when it does happen, you feel a little bit better, like, okay, I know what to do in this situation. I am prepared for this situation. I'm prepared for the emotions that may come up, and I know how I want to feel, you know. And I think when we talk about planning that out, it's first of all really having an attitude or a trigger phrase that helps you kind of get into that response. It's understanding which emotions you want to use, understanding you know, what you ideally want to focus on. And of course, in our minds, we have this sense of how we would like to play, you know. And I think that's a lot of, when we're doing this type of planning, a lot of what we want to start with is that, starting with the end in mind. How do I want to play versus an injured opponent? It's a great place to start for coming up with this plan. And then you describe that, how you want to play versus an injured opponent. And then you're then designing your attitude and your perspective, your emotions and your focus all to support that vision. And that really kind of helps you figure that out. And, you know, I know we went into that a lot in that mental contrasting episode, you know, where we talked about different obstacles that can occur and how we plan around them. So I think that's a great point, Josh, that we want to make sure that we're ready for this scenario, because it is, while not necessarily common, it is likely to happen to you at some point in your career. Not you may not you may only see it once or twice a year, but that's enough to be ready for it, right? So I think that's a really good point. Any other thoughts, Josh, on playing against injured opponents?
I mean, I think it's also important to consider that how we handle it or how we view the situation could depend on where we are in the match. Where if we are, ahead in the match and maybe only a few points away from winning the match ultimately and finishing the match off, it may feel different than if it's a really tight match in the first set, second, third set, or if we're losing. Right. If we're losing, we might feel like this is sort of the break that we needed to potentially get back into this match or potentially win that match. Again, just from our perspective. And it may be easier to actually deal with that than let's say a situation where we're ahead or even, in a really tight battle. It could be easier to sort of find our rhythm at that point and capitalize in the kind of way that we're talking about. So I think it is definitely important to think about how, at what point in a match you are, how that impacts the situation.
Yeah. And regardless, I think, some key points are around the discipline of your routines and rituals, using those as means of helping you deal with any potential distraction that the situation may occur. Because those will always help you figure things out. That's why you've designed these routines and these rituals, because they are places for you to exercise control, and their goal is to help you be as focused as possible for that next point, be perceptive and understand the situation. So it is good to understand where you are in the match. Like with that example I gave with Batista Agut, he's up 6-3, 5-2 in serving. He's right at the end, but just didn't handle it well, right? So again, a top pro, is somebody who's also showing himself to be very human in this area. And so don't see this as anything, like if you've struggled with this, as anything unusual. I think it's another experience that we all have to go through and learn from so that we can become better. And that's how we have to treat it. And, let's say you go through the situation and you fail at it. You don't play well. Well, don't feel bad about yourself. Just try to learn from that experience and take it as something that will make you better for the next time. Know that, okay, I want to try something different the next time. Because if you continue to do the same thing, just like anything, you're going to get the same exact result out of that. And what you're really doing is you're not allowing this experience to help make you stronger. You'll continue to have that experience until you're open to the lesson that teaches you. And I think we've talked about that in terms of a number of different situations in tennis, but this is just another one. And so the more that we're open to these experiences, especially the ones in which we don't perform as we had hoped, the better we'll become. The stronger we'll become as players, the stronger we'll become as human beings.
Absolutely. And when it comes to learning from these experiences, having, using a journal, using some sort of, match log or something like that, where we can jot down, what are some of our thoughts? What did we learn? What went well? What didn't go so well in each of our matches and each of our times that we're out there on court can go a long way to helping us really systematically learn from these experiences.
Yeah, 100%. So great conversation, Josh. Good topic. That's our show for today. Thank you all for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. You can also use the Twitter hashtag tennisiq. Additionally, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, so you can be notified of new episodes. Also, check out our Instagram account. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.